I'm sorry, Pacific time.
Conference record has joined the conference.
We will also be holding a simultaneous chat via Twitter using the hashtag the pound sign CSX leads. So feel free to join us there as we will post your comments and questions and we'll try to answer some of your tweets during the call. So the call will be taped and the audio archive will be available on the National Coalition website very soon. And so now I'd like to introduce today's presenters. So I'm going to introduce all three presenters first. So we have Paolo DeVecchio, who's an MSW and is the Director for the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA's Center for Mental Health Services, CMHS. We have Katera Aslami Tomplin, and she is the Consumer Relations Manager for Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services and was previously the Executive Director of Peers Envisioning and Engaging in Recovery Services, or known as PEERS. And we have Will Hall, who is an internationally recognized schizophrenia survivor and leader in training and advocacy on recovery and mental diversity. He is the author of The Harm Reduction Guide to Coming Off Psychiatric Drugs and the host of Madness Radio. So we're going to start today with Kateri Aslami, and you can find her outline to her presentation on the homepage of the National Coalition's website, which is www.ncmhr.org. So, Katera, would you like to go ahead and start? Katera? Press pound six.
Me? Hi. Yes. Okay, great. Thank you, Karis, for having me on this webinar, and thank you to the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery for hosting this. I want to begin with my journey in terms of getting to where I am today. Starts with my early childhood experiences. Because my parents didn't speak English, I was in a role of interpreting for them at mental health and health appointments and for public assistance like Medicaid, welfare, housing, et cetera. And I had to learn as a child how to address cultural stigma. I internalized the discrimination as a child and struggled emotionally because of it. However, I also knew there were ways to change injustice. And so a fire was lit inside, and I had a passion for social justice. Also, coming from Afghanistan gave me an appreciation for the challenges that I experienced here in the U.S. Because I knew it was probably worse in Afghanistan, and it always gave me an outlook of I can do something about what I'm experiencing here, whereas I know in Afghanistan maybe I wouldn't be able to have that voice. So I always appreciated being able to have a voice. Also through my experience in at school and learning about the civil rights movements for African Americans and also having a deep connection for the civil rights of Native Americans gave me a passion for making a difference and speaking up, and I learned that change can happen. So in my journey, one of other important roles in people were mentors, and the importance of consumers in meaningful roles was really crucial in helping me address my internalized stigma for being diagnosed with mental health challenges. I remember the first day of an internship at a psychiatric hospital, I was welcomed by a peer counselor, Dan, who shared his story of recovery. That was when I started realizing I can have a voice and share my story too. And when I became the executive director of PEERS, I was mentored by Sally Zimmerman and Jay Mahler, who taught me about our history, our accomplishments, our challenges, and the values of inside-outside advocacy. And so that was really instrumental for me. Also, Mary Ellen Copeland was key because I learned how to put one of them to action in my own life. And through the trainings, wellness recovery action plan trainings, I developed and increased my skills in terms of upholding our values of self-determination, of empowerment, of recovery, and hope. in group and individual settings. So I really felt that I learned a lot of skills through those trainings. In terms of those key concepts that were influential for me, the way I connected it to my leadership or to the work that I engage in our community was, hope. Always believing in the people you work for, work with. And if I have a negative story about someone, I need to look at changing that and come at it with a positive and look at the strengths, because anytime I create a negative story about someone or something that I'm working on, the other individuals can feel that. And the power of hope is just amazing. Personal responsibility. I always have to look at myself in my leadership and what I need to do. And if there's a problem, I need to ask myself how I contributed to it and how I, what I can do to help, move past it. In personal responsibility, I also like including recognizing others for successes. So it's when there's successes, it's a collective success. And giving that, shining a light on other people that have contributed to that is powerful and is important in leadership. Education, always learning about, new skills to develop as a leader and how to be more effective, which goes into self-advocacy. I always learned from a young age, I learned I had to find an effective approach to talk to the adults that I was, when I was trying to advocate for my parents. I had to find a way to capture their heart and help them see my parents' perspective as their interpreter. And then relating that to what we do, in our positions or in this movement is always, coming at it with professionalism and self-advocacy. I think I'm a better advocate when I have a relationship with someone and I understand where they're coming from and I can help them and work on that to really be able to move, what I want to see happen and what we know will be improving people's outcomes and health. Support is another area, and the team approach and always looking for mentoring. So I mentioned those five key concepts because I feel like that they fit into not only me personally, but also organizationally and in terms of changing and improving systems. I believe that we are, as leaders, we have tools and resources and acquiring skills through national organizations, consumer survivor organizations like the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, like the Copeland Center for Wellness and Recovery, other organizations like SAMHSA are resources for us to develop our skills as leaders. And the four areas that I feel like most impacted my leadership, things that I focus on, the first is servant leadership. And so I'll say all four. Servant leadership. The second is start with an end vision. The third is execution. And the fourth is power of enthusiasm. And servant leadership is really about work for those who work for you. Even though there are, we have positions in our movement, we in executive positions need to realize we work for people who work for us. The success of organizations and projects do not lie on one individual, but our collective wisdom and teamwork. And I believe that, as leaders, it's not effective to take an authoritative stance. You have to use your influence and persuasion and be willing to model any job for anybody that works for you. So it's just building that influence versus the position, because influence and leadership does not lie within positions. It's our relationships. The next one, number two, is start with an end vision. Figure out what you want this project to be in 5 or 10 years. An example of this was when I started working at Peers, there was a need for Spanish rap groups. And I knew that we didn't have that yet, but I wanted to develop that, and I gave myself 3 years. It happened in 2 years, but it involved, you know, training people, training our community members, and getting facilitators, getting groups in the community, but really having a clear vision and an idea of what I wanted to, what we want to achieve. So what does it look like? And also who will be leading it, what they will be doing, when they will be doing it, and how. So really having sequential steps on how to achieve that, that vision. And that we need to focus on execution, importance of inclusiveness. So nothing about us without us. Once you have your team and develop an end vision, then it's all about inclusion, sequencing and planning, and focusing on execution. So one of the things that I like to highlight is check the small things. We check them. Once you've checked them, check them again. An example I can give is, like, we develop a brain trust, a group of people who reviews important documents like newsletters or public documents, a sounding board so you can refine your ideas, and together we can create, we can get better ideas. So having that checks and balances is really important. It helps us get it right the first time. It's about the process. And we may have great ideas, but if we don't get buy-in, if we're not inclusive, then we may not have done our due diligence, and it will take us longer to get achieve our goal, and take more resources, energy, and time to correct that. So, and then in everything we do, we always remember the power of enthusiasm. I want to end with that because I believe it, what we advocate for, we believe in it completely, authentically, and we know it works. So speaking from the heart about peer support, about consumer survivor operated programs, and also really the importance of we're all leaders in healthcare. In this movement, we're all leaders, no matter what our position is, and we need to look at ourselves as contributing to the overall mission of maximizing recovery and the power of that. And so on my slide, I have some books and trainings that I recommended, but I think my 10 minutes is up. And that's thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Katara. That was great. So our next speaker will be Will Hall. Will, are you ready? So, Will, if you're talking, you need to hit pound six to unmute yourself. Thank you.
Okay, I think I just unmuted myself. Can you hear me now?
Got it. Go for it.
Ah, great. Yeah.
I think we lost you, Will.
I'm here. Should I go ahead?
Please go ahead. If everybody else also could put their phones on mute by hitting star six, that'd be really helpful because we're getting some background noise. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Will.
It's a really strange experience being on this call. It's like almost putting me in an altered state, like the voices and the muting and everything. So thanks, everybody, for bearing with all the technology. And I want to really thank the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery for inviting me and putting this this teleconference together. Judine, I want to thank you, Lauren. And people don't know, Lauren Spiro has a new book that is coming out, and I'm really excited about this. I just had a chance to take a look at a preview copy, so that's really, really exciting. And being here with Katara, Paulo, Karis. Katara, I just was at the Wrap Around the World conference, which was really fantastic, and I really enjoyed your talk just now. It sounds like you've been an advocate and an interpreter and giving voice since childhood, which is really great to learn about it, know that about you. And Paulo, congratulations on being the head of SAMHSA, which is amazing to have someone with lived experience who's a consumer survivor to be head of SAMHSA. That's historic and really wonderful. We know each other, of course, through Alternatives Conference, and I'm just really grateful to be here with all of you. Karis, you and I had a really great dialogue in New York at the American Psychiatric Association, of all places. We ran into each other, and that was a really meaningful conversation, got me into a real appreciation for the work that's going on at many levels for change. It's such like a high power group of people that I'm kind of wondering, well, how did I get here? What am I doing here? And you know, why do people want to listen to what I have to say? And I think that that's really what being a mental patient, being in the system, being given that label and being hospitalized and being in a stigmatized position so often for so many of us, not for all of us, but for so many of us, that identity is the opposite of leadership. It's about not listening. It's about silencing. And so, you know, I think that when I was thinking about this teleconference, I was kind of reminded that in many ways the mental health system for me was a training not in leadership, but a training in failureship. I was really taught the different things that I needed to learn to kind of be stuck and fail and not move forward. And a lot of what I've done has been unlearning that. And I've really been thinking about this question, well, what is leadership? What is this thing? This is a teleconference on visionary leadership. And what is this that we're talking about, leadership? And I think that we all kind of have this understanding, okay, leadership is not the same as being the boss. It's not the same as being in charge or telling people what to do. It's not quite the same as commanding or directing or controlling. And now maybe there's some overlap. Maybe there are managers or there are directors or there are bosses who have that leadership quality. But really, leadership is something that's really quite different. Doesn't that make sense? Something really different than just having power and using it over people and commanding and directing. So I was really wondering, like, what is this thing that we call leadership? And I really like the talk that Katera just gave because it resonates with my thinking about this. And I think all of us are going to have different definitions of what leadership is. And I think we need leadership about what it means to be a leader. But the definition that I came up with is the idea that leadership is listening so deeply that you have to act. Leadership is listening so deeply that you have to act. A leader, someone who has leadership qualities, is listening both to what is going on around them and also what is inside of them. The leadership is about listening so deeply that you have to act. And I think that leadership quality means that real leadership, a leadership that has legitimacy, a leadership that people connect with, a leadership that, as Katera said, is a relationship of leadership, it's always a conversation. It's always about a response. It's always about a relationship. It's always about a connection. And a leader is someone who has leadership, is someone who really is listening deep enough that they're hearing the things that aren't being said. They're paying attention to the feelings that haven't been expressed. They're acting on the needs that haven't taken action on yet. And I'm just thinking of the great leaders of U.S. history. I mean, Dr. King comes to mind. Harvey Milk comes to mind. Rosa Parks comes to mind. The great abolitionist Sojourner Truth comes to mind. Sojourner Truth actually was so inspired. She listened so deeply to what was inside of her that she changed her name to Sojourner Truth, which basically means follower of truth, the one who's on the path of truth. And all of them allowed people to feel heard. When they spoke, when they stepped up, when they acted, people felt that connection. They felt that relationship, and people felt heard. People felt like the leader was responding to them. Dr. King was listening to the voices of so many people who were angry about Jim Crow and lynchings and what was going on with racism and also poverty and war. Harvey Milk listened to the drag queen who staged a rebellion at the Stonewall Inn and kicked off the gay rights movement. He was someone who was really tuned in and really connected to that passion that was there that maybe people didn't have the expression.
Put your phone on mute and we'll take questions at the very end. So write your questions down for Will and we'll take it at the end. Press pound. I'm sorry, press star 6. Thanks.
Is that unmute me?
To mute, yes, it will mute you and then pound 6 to unmute yourself. Thank you. Go ahead, Will. Sorry.
Okay. Where was I? Drag queens. Okay. But no, I'm really excited. I'll make this short because I'm really excited to hear people's questions and thoughts and comments. And I think you know, this is when I look at sort of my own journey and my own process, that failureship training in the mental health system, I learned to start listening to myself. And I learned to start listening to things that were very deep inside of me. And I could hear other people. I could see other people. I could see and connect with the needs around me. And there was a need for people to talk more openly about coming off medication. And people felt caught between, well, we don't want to be anti-medication, but then again, we have to talk about this. And so I felt there was that need there, and I was able to follow something inside of myself. And that ended up getting a huge response. The people were very, very receptive and really had that need and really felt heard when I was able to work with a lot of other people and then come up with this guide that said, look, we don't have to be anti-medications. We don't have to be pro-medications. We just have to have a conversation. It's important to have that conversation about coming off medication. And I think that there's something even deeper here. There's something about when we're listening, we're really listening to nature, we're listening to nature and ourselves, listening to nature. We're really moved by something bigger than ourselves, the idea of visions or inspirations. Isn't something larger than ourselves? Isn't the idea that people are moved by history, or they're moved by something that's beyond them, or they're moved by the tide of the society? And I think that the psychiatric survivor movement has a huge, huge, huge role to play today. Because think about it for a second. When you are someone who's been in extreme suffering, when you're someone who's reached the point where you're in the hospital, when you're deep, deep, deep alone with your pain, you are forced to encounter some of the things that no one wants to listen to. The kinds of feelings and emotions and impulses and urges and fantasies and paranoias and voices, all the different things that are part of the human experience that people are pushing away and marginalizing and suppressing. And so the psychiatric survivor movement is listening to something inside of ourselves, and we learn to listen. We learn to express it. We learn to give it voice. So I think in our society, we have an extraordinary role to play to help people to connect with their feelings, to get people to connect with very, very dark experiences, to get people to connect with parts of themselves that otherwise they would feel ashamed about or isolated about. And our movement can really play an incredible role in leadership. And one of the things that I've learned is that, you know, my experience, when I listen to myself, when I really listen deep inside of myself, I do find that sometimes there are suicidal feelings there. And I'm strongly committed to being here. I'm not going to take my life. I don't want to end my life. But I've learned that when I listen to those suicidal parts of myself, when I listen to those feelings, I often find very meaningful things, that a part of me wants to be heard, that a part of me wants change, part of me wants powerlessness, wants power. Part of me feels powerless and wants power. What change do I want? What change? How do I make the step? How do I make that change? How do I get help? How do I get support? How do I feel empowered to make these changes? So for me, one of the things that I want to leave this discussion with and leave you with is thinking about the importance of us to start listening to each other and listening to ourselves and giving voice to those suicidal feelings that we have. I know it's difficult. I know it's challenging. But this is something that's hugely needed. Suicidal feelings are much more widespread and common than we recognize. There's a huge amount of pain in it, a lot of fear. But at the same time, we know the power of peer support. We know the power of making those connections. We know the power of listening. We know the power of helping people out of their isolation. And then the other thing that comes up for me that's really important, and I've talked about this in my alternative talk, is really starting to listen to the voices of people who've been affected by the prison system. Our communities are being torn apart by the war on drugs and the prison system, and I really think that our movement, the Consumer Survivor Ex-Patient Movement, can do better to really getting prison issues on the agenda that, unfortunately, the Democrats have not given leadership. The Republicans, of course, and so many different politicians have not given us leadership around these issues. And in fact, the war on drugs and the prison system is a terrible, terrible human tragedy that's happening in our society. We can make changes in our drug laws. We can make changes in the way we approach crime that can really help heal communities. And so that's something, you know, when I go to support groups and I work with people, I'm hearing these stories about how the prison system and being an ex-inmate and having a story, not being able to get a job or not being able to find a place to live, and background checks and three strikes and probation, all this whole system is really so devastating. Of course, the impact is so disproportionate along racial lines. So I feel very strongly that these are the issues that we need to listen to. And then finally, just to wrap up, because I really want to give us as much time as we can for questions and discussion, I really think that being a leader and leadership is about helping other people discover their leadership. People come to me and they ask questions and they see me as someone who has knowledge and I've been on this journey and I've learned some things. Well, of course, but really the answers are always back inside of you. All the trainings that I do, all the work that I do is always about cultivating people's confidence to look inside of themselves and to pay attention to what's going on around themselves and to really give voice to it, to really trust that they have leadership qualities, that they can quiet themselves, that they can become still and receptive and open. The answers are inside of all of us, and that all of us can cultivate our leadership. And I really hope, that we can carry that forward, because I think the psychiatric survivor movement has an incredible role to play. And so I just want to thank everybody for inviting me, and I'll wrap up now, and we'll move on to Paolo, and then we'll have our discussion. So thank you again so much for having me be part of this.
Okay,
can
thank
I ask
you, Will.
The question?
So our final presenter for today will be Paolo DeVecchio. So, Paolo, do you want to go ahead and start?
That's how they're treating you.
Hi, everyone. Let me add my thanks to Karis, Lauren, National Coalition, and co-presenters and everyone on the call today. You're all leaders in your own right. It's an honor to be on the call today. So I'm going to talk about three things briefly. One are a few folks who've been instrumental, at least in my own leadership development. Second are some key practices that I found to be really helpful in leadership development. And then talk a little bit about context that we find ourselves today, and then wrap it up. So to start, a few folks just to acknowledge that have been really instrumental in my own leadership, and have to say, first of all, Joseph Rogers. And for Joseph bringing me into the consumer survivor movement and showing me the way and introducing me to this wonderful community of people. I cannot acknowledge Joseph enough. Second is my mother, and for giving me a passion for social justice, for giving me a passion for learning, and for helping others. May she rest in peace. Third is the hundreds and thousands of peers who I've been fortunate to know over the last 30 years while being part of this consumer survivor movement and the mutual support and help really along the way. So just a few folks that have helped. Five key practices that I'd like to just quickly note that I find really helpful in terms of leadership development.
He said.
And I'll talk a couple examples about each of these, but the five are modeling the way, inspiring a shared vision, challenging a process, empowering others to act, and encouraging the heart. So first, modeling the way. I'm a firm believer in principled leadership, that we need to clearly articulate our principles and live by those principles and act in through our work, daily work. And those principles are really embedded in what the consumer movement principles are and values of respect, of self-determination, of people, mutual support, of having hope. And really embedding those values and principles in our daily work, in our daily lives. So an example of this, when I started this current role, CMHS set forward a set of operating principles that we call Team CMHS. And again, borrowing from consumer movement values, that's an acronym, Team CMHS, around transparency, empowerment, accountability, mutual support. Make up team, community, making a difference, hope, safety being the CMHS. So, you know, one of the first things I did was lay out these particular principles and values and discussions with staff here to reinforce what are, you know, at the fundamental very much movement, consumer movement values and principles, and then continuing to act and reinforce on those particular principles and values. So modeling the way. Second is inspiring a shared vision. So people need to know, you know, where are we headed? What's the future going to be to help rally people to a goal? And, you know, just an example of this, one of the things I'm certainly very proud of during my time at SAMHSA is our work on seclusion and restraint issues. So having SAMHSA in a few years back set forward a vision to end the use of these practices in all mental health and addiction treatment facilities was a landmark occasion and one of setting a clear vision for all of us to rally around and work towards. Third, challenging the process. So, you know, there are times where we need to speak up, stand up, and speak out. And in order for change to happen, sometimes we've got to take risks and we got to put ourselves out there. And again, Joseph teaching me the way here of efforts, you know, back in the day of taking it to the streets for direct action to challenging processes internally here within federal bureaucracies. Fourth, empowering others to act. And you know, the beauty about empowering others to act is how that, in fact, empowering yourself through those processes. And by giving other people a voice, how you really support your own voice through that. But we certainly need collective voices in order to accomplish what we want to try to do to improve the lives of people impacted by mental health problems. And giving people that voice and that participation in their lives in all aspects, you know, the true meaning of nothing about us without us. And finally, encouraging the heart. People want to make a difference. People want to, you know, give back. And, you know, the fundamental drive for people to try to make it a better place for others and their brothers and sisters and ways of recognizing people for making a difference and setting forward that vision, I found at least to make all the difference. So those are my five: modeling the way, inspiring a shared vision, challenging the process, empowering others, and encouraging the heart. Let me turn really quickly to context that we find ourselves today. Post Newtown, Connecticut, and horrible tragedy of 27 people losing their lives, majority of course being elementary school kids. And we find ourselves after that incident in a national discussion around mental health issues and both opportunities and threats along that line. And
that's what we were doing.
As we can all, you know, read in the newspapers and hear on the media, some of the statements and imagery, you know, can set us back a long way in terms of discussions about needing to go back to institutional care or needing to increase the use of coercion or you know, the list goes on and on, linking us to violent acts, et cetera. And the real concerns that this will have, both in terms of public attitudes as well as public policy. And at the same time, there certainly are opportunities that arise also through crises and opportunities that mental health is in some ways never had before in terms of the spotlight on these particular issues. You know, there are ways for us to capitalize on these issues to promote a peer-driven approach, a recovery-driven, trauma-informed care approach to the work we're trying to do. And in light of that, again, the real need for all of us to be collective in our approach, to follow these principles of at times, you know, taking calculated risk, of setting forth a vision, encouraging, empowering others to act along the way. Because the, you know, president's proposals when he announced his response in late January was, now is the time. So if there ever was a time for us as consumer survivors to join together, now is the time. And I'll end with two quotes that I have pasted on my wall here in my office that I've had for many years. One is, don't let the blankety blanks get you down.
Right.
Yeah, and the importance there, that message of perseverance, in that the, you know, struggle that we're in won't be, and it's not an easy one, it's not one that's solved today or tomorrow, won't be addressed fully in our lifetimes, but the need for us to have perseverance and recognizing the long-term goals and keeping our eye on the prize, so to speak, as we continue our daily work and through the struggles that we face daily.
We are more patient.
Don't let the blankety-blanks get you down. And second is, appreciate Will bringing up Dr. King, a quote from Dr. King that reads, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. So, again, thank you to Karis, Lauren National Coalition, and you all for the work you do.
Thank you very much, Paolo, and thank you to all of our speakers for these inspiring and thought-provoking presentations. Now we would really like to hear from you. So if you would like to ask questions, please hit #6 to unmute your line, and then ask your question, and then you'll hit *6 to mute again. So please say your name and where you're from before asking a question. We will also be taking some questions that come in via Twitter, and in order to leave time for as many questions as possible, can you try to keep your questions and comments brief to about one or two sentences? Let's see.
Hi, this is Vedam Prasad with ASHA International, joining from Portland, Oregon. Thanks to each and every one of the speakers. Thank you for the inspiration. That is exactly what we need to persevere in this journey, in our collective mission. I just have a simple request, if you could make available the contact information for the speakers.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else have a question?
Yes, I found this to be very interesting. And I'm going to be going back to School for Human Services. I have so much drive to help people with issues and advocate. How can I get more involved to help those people?
Okay, presenters, do you want to take a answer a question?
Anybody there?
Yes, I'm seeing if one of the presenters would like to answer the question. Is there a particular center you'd like to hear from?
The guy that spoke was very good, and he was on my level. I like to speak with him.
So, Will or Paolo, do you have a response for this young woman?
I'm sorry, could she repeat her question?
I have a lot of desire to help other people that have mental issues. I have a small amount of mental issues, but I want to help them. I'm going back to school in order to help other people with certain needs. How do I get to be an advocate?
Great. And where are you based?
Richmond, Virginia.
There's a group in Virginia, Vocal, that...
Yeah, I'm on their advocate committee.
Okay, well, I would encourage you to connect up with them and as ways of using your interest to help others by working with Vocal and the good work they do, and appreciate your interest in helping others.
And this is Charles in Georgia. And also there's a national movement as it relates to becoming a part of the National Association of Peer Supports that would enable you to use your lived experience to support that you come in contact with. And it's amazing the effort that's being put to task in bringing about changes in the mental health system as it relates to peer supporting peers. So there's a place for you. I think one
what
of the
was the name of
do,
it?
Though,
the National Peer Support?
National Peer Support. Mm-hmm. NAPS for short. Actually, they have a conference every year.
Yeah, I'd like to. And I've already gotten all of the training I need. I just got to get a job. But I took Georgia. And then took the peer support training in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
So I've got some of the things that I need to get started. I just been trying to get a job and advocate at the same time. And a friend of mine, Mr. Pretty, is a lobbyist, and he's got a disability. He took the flu shot and got Guillain-Barré syndrome and lost his leg. But the man used to go down and really talk for the mentally ill. And I asked him, how'd you get involved? He said, a lot of work.
Oh, well,
okay, we wish you the best of luck with that. And definitely continue to work with Vocal. They're very, very powerful advocates. I'm all the way in California. I'm very familiar with their work. So continue to work with them, and you'll certainly become a powerful advocate yourself. So do I have another person with a question for the presenters?
Yes, this is Diane calling from Illinois. And
Diane,
go
ahead.
My son has very painful headaches. And in the past, he has heard voices, but he's not hearing them anymore. And I was just wondering, do you know what the headache, I mean, he's had extensive testing done for the headaches, and they can't seem to find anything.
Well, I would probably say, and I'll let the presenters answer, you know, none of us are really doctors in that way.
I know.
Yeah, but are there other folks of the presenters who'd like to give some assistance?
Hi, this is Will. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would. I think it's really interesting what you're saying that they haven't found anything from a medical standpoint. But what does your son himself say about it? Does he have any ideas about what the headaches might be related to?
No, he doesn't. He, you know, like I say, he's talked to his doctor about it, and they just can't figure out why he has the headaches. And I'm just wondering itself if it's from, you know, the form of mental illness. I'm not sure if it's the pressure or the stress. Do you know what I'm saying?
It could be as simple as
migraines.
I'm sorry?
It could be as simple
migraines, maybe?
Well, it's not a migraine. It's just, you know, just chronic headaches.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Things are environmental, to stress, to just a number of things. We certainly hope that your son continues to talk about the things that may be contributing to his headaches if he notices some things that change right before he has a headache and so forth, and be able to connect with others who maybe are going through the same experience. That's what our peer support is all about. Hopefully he'll be able to find some resolution. Thanks so much. Do I have another caller? Another caller.
Can I just say something real quick here? Jen Constantine,
yes, sure,
from South Dakota. Could we maybe give that woman and anyone else who has questions that aren't really related to the leadership topic on the call somehow give them contact information to get access to this kind of stuff? Because I'd really be more, if we could focus on kind of the topic of the call, that would be great for me.
Sure.
Are people okay with that? Like maybe if people have other kinds of questions, maybe there's another avenue to...
Sure.
Well,
so the basic of the call is leadership, and
you know, we do ask you to kind of stay on that topic if you're able, and if things come up that are off topic, we can certainly give resources and references. Thanks very much for the comment. Any other questions?
Well, I have something that's on topic. This is Brian Younger from Seattle. Now, I work within the clinic system. I'm one of 34 peers that give services to 15,000 different clients a year just inside our clinic system in this county. Almost 1 in 10 of the staff are peers. And I work hard to raise the consciousness of other staff, social workers, for instance, in terms of keeping recovery in the front, in terms of giving their clients hope in all the different situations they work in. And I was just wondering how we can be more influential and effective in getting the message across to staff in this kind of setting. I think in the future we'll have many, many more peer-run organizations, but currently a lot of our peers, our clients, are in the clinic system. And I'm 61 years old, and I don't know how far we'll travel in the next 5 years, but I've chosen this path. So if any of the presenters have any comments, it would be helpful for people who are working within the clinic system in terms of how to bring this reform about.
Can you hear me? This is Katara.
Yes, go ahead, Katara.
First, Brian, I want to commend you on great work, and it sounds like you are, you know, committed to this movement and have been doing some work already. And I would, I guess what I've done in the past is just continue with what you're doing. I mean, raising consciousness of about recovery, but also, in addition, developing a relationship with individuals. So, like right now, I'm in a government. I work for Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, and so there's everything is bureaucracy in there. And though our mission is to maximize wellness and recovery, I think it really happens when I already assume everybody has that mission also. And so when I build a relationship with them, I'm trying to get to know them as a person, what their values are, and then connect that to how our work in recovery is so powerful, how it changes people's lives, and how it works for anyone. And the power, in addition to it working for anyone, the power of exposing other individuals, professional or clinicians, whatever we want to call it, people in different roles, to stories of recovery of people that they've maybe seen in their system but now is doing better. So creating a way for individuals that have been through your program to come back and share their stories of recovery and where they're at, I found that being very helpful and powerful.
Yeah, this is Will, and yes, I want to just echo everything that Katara said, and it sounds like you're doing really great work there. And one of the things that I've found is really helpful is to see if you can get a discussion going where people are talking, peers and clinicians and just all the staff are talking together about common human experiences, recovery from tragedy, any kind of tragedy, whether it's a mental health tragedy or just a human tragedy. All of us have experience with, you know, going through the recovery process and what it took to recover and what we needed. And all of us have experiences of anxiety. All of us have experiences of different kinds of emotional suffering. We may be at different points in the continuum, but it's still a human continuum. And I think that one of the ways that we can begin to change organizational cultures in the mental health system is if we start to have a real level, shared, everybody is human discussion about these human problems where all of the staff who maybe aren't accustomed to disclosing are invited, and no one is pressured or expected, but at least there's an invitation for everybody to talk on the same level about, well, how do we survive as human beings? How do we get through our day? How did we recover. Everybody has some kind of recovery story, and I think that can be really helpful to just get the discussion going among everybody.
May I ask a question to Will?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I am high functioning. I have a learning disability, but with that goes on with the anxiety, test anxiety, and depression from being beat up by a husband. But I really don't have a recovery. How do I make, I mean, what do I say when somebody says to me, what's your recovery? What's your envision? Well, I have my envision, and I have my leadership, but I don't really have much of a story to tell. What do you do about that?
I think recovery is a long process, and it's hard to really imagine what it is that you're going through. I mean, a lot of the words that we use are often, you know, sort of signs on a door. One person means one thing by depression, another person means another thing, and so it's hard to understand exactly what it is that you're going through from the language. But I think that to really value where you've been and where you've come from, and to see the changes that have happened, and if you're still struggling, then to surround yourself by people who really see your capacity for change, who see the long view, and who have their own stories to tell, and then maybe listen to those stories and compare them, and maybe you can learn ideas that will help you in your next steps. And sometimes when we feel stuck, we need to just change our environment, get different people around us, different people who maybe believe in us, even when we don't believe in ourselves, who can remind us that, hey, we have come through things. We do have strength. We have changed. We have learned things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I just kind of wondered, because I'm so high functioning and so strong-willed to do the right thing for anybody. And I guess that came from my father, but I have a lot of envisions and a lot of leadership I want to do, but I have to want to focus it into one area.
I have a question.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, my name's Jeannie Peshier, and I'm working to reignite the fire of consumer activism here in New Hampshire. It being the 10th anniversary of David Hilton's death. I don't know if any of you knew him, but he was a great leader here in New Hampshire, starting the Office of Consumer Affairs and the peer support agencies. And what I would like to ask is, for rural areas like New Hampshire, the biggest barrier I'm coming across is transportation and the lack of, a lot of folks don't have transportation who want to get involved with advocacy. Because of financial reasons, I don't have a car. And the other is, I'd like someone to comment on the conflict, if you see, I do, conflict between some of the peer-run agencies getting, you know, and they get their funding from the government, not being willing or able to speak out against government policy because of fear of losing that funding. So those are my two questions.
Jeannie?
Yeah?
Can I be heard? This is Susan Rogers, actually, Director of the National Mental Health Consumer Self-Help Clearinghouse. And I just want to say that personally, and I think Paolo might even be able to attest to this, the fact that we get government funding has never stopped us from speaking truth to power. And, you know, Joseph.
It has in New Hampshire. It definitely has in New Hampshire.
I'm faced with the same issue. If you don't have money, you can't go anywhere. And the Medicaid allows, this is strange, but LogistiCare gives me half of a ride. So what do I do? Walk home? I mean, it's crazy. So they didn't tell me I had a certain amount for the year. I used 32 rides because I needed to go somewhere, but I can't get any more rides. I mean, so I hear what she's saying. What do you do
about
that?
Yeah, I think this is Carissa, the moderator, and I run a peer-run organization. And I think there are several things that can happen. And certainly, you know, we always worry about what's called quote-unquote co-optation, meaning when you're taking money from the same entity, government source or county source or what have you, that you also have to, in order to provide your services, that somehow you have to, as I say, so I use this term, I say, well, you gotta have your hand up to the man for the money while you give it to the man because they're not doing the right thing. That's the way I put it. And I think there are a couple of different ways that peer organizations, even though they're taking money from government entities and or other entities, can still be very effective advocates in advocating for change. And there's a difference between what happens as a quote-unquote inside advocate or an outside advocate. And when we apply those different principles, I think both sets of advocacy working together in different ways, one on the outside and one on the inside, can be very, very effective. And for transportation, certainly being able to help to make sure that people understand what their benefits are and how those benefits impact their ability to get around and empower people to be able to get around is going to be very, very crucial as we talk about leadership and things that leaders need to continue to think about in relation to the things that we're advocating for. So I don't know if there's anybody else, Will or Katera or Paolo, if you'd like to respond to that question. Okay, so we have a few more minutes. Are there any other questions?
This is actually Sheena Raji. Hello, I'd like to respond to that as a solution for that.
Well, we only have a few minutes, Sheena, so I want to first make sure that if there are any other questions that can go to the panelists, and then we'll let you respond, if that's all right.
Well, I also have some other responses as well.
Okay, go ahead.
So, okay, a couple of quick things. I'm going to respond very, very quickly. First of all, thank you to the National Coalition for responding to this call. My name is Sheena Raj. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. And a couple of things I'm going to respond to the issue of leadership. And in all of our great movements, whether it be in our history, much as what Will has said, whether it be the feminist or civil rights movement or gay rights movement, all the leaders had a spirit of magnanimity. Abraham Lincoln, for anybody who's recently seen that movie, had a spirit of magnanimity where we were able to rise above a lot of things. It encompasses and it speaks to the fact to not be petty, a willingness to face danger, and actions for a noble purpose. And right now, I want to speak to the fact that, you know, in our community we have such a phenomenal consumer survivor movement, but there's a lot of polarization. There's a lot that is occurring that we're not coming together as a community necessarily. And, you know, to me, leadership is not position dependent. Leadership is about responding to opportunities, challenges, and crisis. And effective leadership is about building communities as a whole. And so I'd like to, you know, address this to all the panelists as to how can we address some of the issues within our own community, within our own wonderful consumer survivor community, to really become more strength-based, more supportive of one another, and to kind of reduce that polarization. That what I see. And then secondly, I want to respond to the woman that you know, had transportation issues in New Hampshire. I ran a huge statewide project in the state of Massachusetts. When we did a lot of advocacy and leadership building, and when we didn't have transportation, we would give each other rides. We set up a proposal. We took it to the Department of Mental Health. We just had a statewide Department of Mental Health system. And we, you know, gave them a proposal of we needed transportation needs. We came together as a community to address that. It takes time, but, you know, in the interim, we did whatever we could to support each other, to get out there, to be able to advocate and speak to the issues that were very, very important as a community.
It's not going to Medicaid then, right? Sticking together.
Yeah, we have about 1 minute to let our presenters respond quickly and to be able to kind of wrap this up in a nice little pretty bow. So, Katera, Will, and Paolo, could you make some last-minute statements and response?
Hello, we got a quick question up here in Canada before you get going there.
Is he talking to me?
Okay,
we'll talk to anybody who will answer it. Is there a way that we can make these peer support organizations international?
Okay, can we go ahead, please?
Is there a way that we can make these organizations international?
Hi, this is Paulo.
Hi.
There is an international organization that you might be familiar with, World Federation of Psychiatric Survivors, I believe is its name, Survivors and Users. That might be one group for you to look at, but I also wanted to respond to the last question in reference to really the need for people to support one another. And yes, there's been lots of conflicts that have been frankly destructive among folk leadership, and the importance of again following the principles that we talk about, mutual support and respect, and that we have to live and work those on a daily basis as we look to the larger goals that are, confront us.
Okay. Thank you very much. So it is 4:30 now, Eastern Time, 1:30 Pacific Time, and it's time to conclude the teleconference. I'd like to thank our speakers once again for their excellent presentations and to all of you for your participation. We hope that you've been inspired by what you've heard today. And if you'd like to receive updates about the work of the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, please visit the website at www.ncmhr.org, where you can sign up for email updates as well as follow us on Facebook and Twitter. So thanks again to our presenters and to our participants for joining us today. We encourage you to take the next step in your own leadership and have a great year. We look forward to regrouping next year at our 2014 Leadership Teleconference. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.